Chapter 32. Unwelcome Visitors. Kairos listened to the echoes of his own footsteps as he climbed the dungeon stairs. He counted them. He wanted something to keep his mind from what he had just done. Phelan's source had been such a flimsy thing. A porcelain cup he dashed against the floor in a moment's temper. What if Varnas was wrong? Was being a tool of Roshan cause enough to kill him? Kairos felt dirty, carrying the last of the illusionist's ether about inside him. He tried to tell himself that he had burned away the stolen remnants by enabling the wards that sealed the cell, but he knew he had taken far more than the simple locking magic had required. He said not a word to anyone he passed as he made his way up from the dungeon and through the palace halls. When he reached his own chambers, he poured ether into the wards until the runes glowed in the light. While those runes spelled out the terms of his personal protections, it seemed like he was posting Phelan to guard over him. Kairos stalked over to his desk and threw himself into the chair. He shuffled his notes about until he found a nagging fact with depths he had not plumbed. He read, willing the words into his mind at the expense of all others. He examined one of the passages from the Warlock Prophecies. Broken vase spills blue-white blood. The missing pieces are keys that lock the final door. What if Roshan discovers Phelan behind that locked door and knows that it was me and not the cell that killed him? Patch the holes that are only halves. Kairos took a deep breath and rubbed at his eyes. He tried again. Broken vase spills blue-white blood. There was no blood except on Varnas's neck. The missing pieces are keys that lock the final door. Patch the holes that are only halves. Kairos stood and paced about the room. He looked at the notes accusingly, as if they put those thoughts in his head. Glaring at them, he settled himself and sat down once more. Broken vase spills blue-white blood. The missing pieces are keys that lock the final door. Patch the holes that are only halves. Roshan knew what he was missing. The source analogy was the key. One vase, filling fast, spilling faster. To see another, no mirror may reflect it. Where to find its shadow? An absence, not a copy. Seek a way among the spirits. Kairos had been so caught up in the final line that he had brushed too lightly by the middle lines. The only vase that could empty faster than it was filled was a broken one. It might as well have been part of the other verse. No mirror. Absence. Shadow. They all seem to indicate an inverse, perhaps a mathematical complement. I have to have a look at my own source. There were simple magics for doing so, he had been told. He had just never learned any of them. He scooped up his notes and thrust them amid a stack of books. He needed no reference to remember every line of them. Their presence was only an aid to organize his thoughts. He no longer needed that aid. Kairos rushed to the Tower of Contemplation and up the stairs to its libraries. His path opened up before him as people scrambled out of his way. Sir Brennus Solaran was clearly on some vital errand. If only they knew how vital it was. The librarian on duty found him the book he was looking for, Ethereal Introspection. A treatise on source and self. Kairos dismissed the librarian from the rest of his day's duties and bid him return after the wedding the following day. He sat down at one of the research tables and remembered a time not so very long ago when Brannis had done the same. Brannis had been desperate, lacking in focus but not in determination. Kairos had ample reserves of both. He flipped through the pages for the words of a spell, finding it only a few pages in, an essential tool for exploring the book's premises, none of which concerned Kairos in the least at that moment.
Tenmak, Refu, Danakali, Vindo, Kairos chanted.
There was no gesture but to close his light-seeing eyes. The sensation was like that of the deep ether voyage of a transference spell. His perspective was dislodged, freed from its fleshy confines to drift about on its own. Unlike the transference spell,
There was no disproportionality of distance and time. He could raise his hand and wave to himself, but most of all he saw himself as a source. In fact, he could see little else. He had never imagined the brightness of it, an inferno of blue-tinged white. Most other sources were a gentle blend of the two colors, but his burned with visible intensity that seared away the blue tones. There was something indistinct about it, as well. Other sources had defined edges, making them look like human dolls, or statues of ether come to life. There was nothing bounding Kairos's own source. It kept a general human shape, but like a child's painting. My source is fully open. Brannis's is nearly completely sealed. He must drip ether like a dew-blessed leaf, while mine pours from me like a waterfall. I lack exactly what he has, and also the reverse. One source, split unequally between two worlds. No, not just two worlds, split between bodies. There is only one source between us. That must be the secret. Roshan did not go to Tellurak to attempt to share the secret of immortality with his twin, nor to finish Aga's business for him. He went there to find the missing piece of his own source.
Just look at those things, Juliana called out. Pines the size of towers. Oaks we could land this airship on. I had no idea the interior of Padawai was so ancient.
Juliana would have named more of the trees, but had run herself out of the species she could identify. I shall take you at your word, Teba called from halfway up the stairs to the deck.
I think it's about time you got up here and started helping to look. If there's something down there, I'm guessing this is the part of the forest where it would be hidden,
Juliana replied. She spared a glance back at him and saw that he had not moved.
Get up here, you craven ox! Buckle yourself into a harness and watch over the railing.
Teba ignored her. He turned and went below decks. Juliana activated the runes that projected her voice to the interior of the ship.
You'd best keep a sharp eye out those windows. I don't need ballast on this ship. Either help or I'll drop you somewhere.
Juliana returned her attention to the viewing screen, the glass showing an endless blur of trees speeding past beneath them. She swept the view back and forth, the equivalent of swiveling the ship's head as it flew. An hour or so later, she caught a quick glimpse of a break in the trees as they passed over. It was a large clearing of some sort. She had seen nothing on the ground, but it was the first major break in the tree cover that she had seen since they reached the denser part of the central forest. If there were creatures living somewhere within, that was as good a place as any to start looking for them.
Did you see that? Juliana called down to the hold.
No, what did you see? Teba called back.
I am going to stab that good eye right out of your head, you cowardly whoreson. I know you aren't afraid of heights, so there's no excuse to being afraid of being on deck.
She knew her flying exploits had spooked him, but he was carrying it too far.
There's a clearing we passed over. I'm going to bring us around for a slower look at it. Might even take us down, Juliana called back.
Juliana switched grips on the ship's wheel, and the starlit marauder began to turn. She had been flying it long enough to realize that something was wrong when it reacted sluggishly to her command. The ship turned, but it was having difficulty about it.
Merciful Tancha, I think we've almost exhausted the ether in her.
Juliana had gone so long on the first ether with which Kairos had imbued the ship that she had imagined it might run eternally. She ought to have known better. Somewhere in the disused corners of her mind, she did. Ancient, rune-forged bits like Avalanche scrounged up enough stray ether to keep themselves going indefinitely. Others, like Brannis's armor, replenished themselves so slowly that they often needed supplementing. But Soria's daggers ran themselves out in a few days' hard use, and Rakashi's blade lasted not much longer. The starlit marauder, it seemed, had just informed her of its limit. She managed to complete the turn, and put them back on a heading for the clearing, but the turn had grown slower even as it had finished. The ship was drifting slower as well, and began losing altitude. They were not terribly high above the trees to begin with, so any drop at all was alarming.
Tiba! Juliana shouted,
not even wanting to waste the ether to shout at him via the runes.
We're losing ether! I've got to set us down somewhere! Grab hold of something!
Juliana's Safshan was shoddy, consisting largely of curse words. She understood most of the invective Tiba shouted up at her from the hold. They were not going to make it to the clearing, and nowhere was there a clear path to the ground that she could see. As they drifted lower, they brushed against branches, listing as the ship was unable to compensate for the drag. Snapping and crackling accompanied every step of their progress as the starlit marauder slowly crashed. Juliana had to duck behind the ship's wheel as one large specimen threatened to swat her free of the ship. She searched frantically, not knowing how long she had before the ship's ether gave way entirely. She thought back to one of her first impressions of seeing the colossal oaks and decided to attempt to land among the branches. She took what little control she still had of the ship and steered nearer one of the trunks. There was a crook in a branch, each fork as wide as a man's height, that looked to be their best hope. Juliana lined the ship up as best she could and slowed the marauder until it hovered above. With a quick prayer to Tansha, Juliana set the ship down. They landed with a creak and a crackling of lesser branches. The ship leaned to the left, in the direction of a fall to an unplumbed depth. Juliana released breath she had not realized she had been holding. She unbuckled herself from the captain's harness and crept over to the ship's railing. Peering over the edge was like gazing into a leafy abyss. There was no ground in sight for all the branches and greenery that spread below them. A breeze blew, not a gale or a stiff wind, but the tree gave a gentle sway. The ship swayed along with it, and Juliana grabbed for the railing to stay her balance on the tilted deck. When the ship stopped moving once more, she scampered for the stairs to the hold.
Tiba, find all the rope you can, she called out to him. We need to secure the ship.
What if, perhaps, you renewed the ship's ether and we made our way to the clearing?
Tiba hollered back.
Juliana rummaged through the ship's supplies, thankful that the quartermasters in Cadrus could not grasp the concept that a ship with no rigging did not need to keep coils of rope by the dozen on hand for repairs.
What is your problem, Tiba?
He walked in behind her and began helping to gather the rope.
A man thinks he has passed beyond fear until he finds a fear beyond simple preservation of his own life. If I die, there may be no one who can pass word along to Rashan about Brannis's death, Tiba replied.
You think he would believe you, or that it would matter whether he did? Juliana asked.
I think if Brannis knew the truth, we could manage to convince Rashan, Tiba reasoned. Kyrus could maintain the lie.
Juliana sighed and set down the rope coils she had slung over her arm. She turned to look at Tiba in his mismatched eyes. There was a desperate earnestness there.
He doesn't care about Brannis or even himself. He's just willing to try anything to save Safshan.
Fine. I had hoped things might work themselves out before summer came, but I can't ask you to do nothing. Just do me one favor.
What is that? Tiba asked.
It's Brannis's age day tomorrow. Just wait until later to tell him. I don't want to ruin it for him.
Tiba relented and helped to secure the starlit marauder to the tree's branches. Neither of them were proper sailors, and the knots were shoddy, but telekinesis had allowed them to loop the ropes around the limbs and get a fair hold of them. Tiba followed Juliana as she went below to the heart of the ship's rune structure. She had looked over all the runes when she had first taken command, but it was a cursory inspection, more for curiosity than study. Looking in more detail, she grew skeptical that she would be able to do much with them.
Grab hold of something. When Kyrus activated it the first time, the whole ship shook, and that was just in dry dock.
This could get a bit wobbly, Juliana warned. She put her hands to the runes and closed her eyes. She took a long, deep breath and let the ether flow into and through her and into the starlit marauder. For a moment, a brief, glorious moment, it felt as if it might work. But as she progressed, she felt what seemed like an unending journey through the whole of the ship's rune structure. She could find no end in sight. Juliana collapsed to the floor, panting. She found that she was dripping with sweat and wiped it away with a sleeve. She shook her head.
"I feared as much," Tiba said. "We are stranded here until Kairos comes to find us."
"Well, we can still go check out that clearing," said Juliana. "It can't be more than a couple hours on foot."
When Juliana had recovered her strength, she set off alone. Tiba had offered to stay and guard the ship, presumably from owls and hawks, since little else of consequence could reach so high. The trip down was exhilarating. Juliana trusted her own magic implicitly.
Having used such spells as both herself and Soria,
she stepped onto the ship's railing and over the edge. Down she plummeted, angling herself to guide her fall. Several times she kicked off against a branch that threatened to interrupt her downward journey. When she finally reached the bottom, she decided that the trees must be the height of the cloud wall, or close to it. So far she had fallen. She could not look back up to see above the canopies that blotted out the treetops. The forest floor was uneven, but free of all but fungal underbrush. Gnarled roots twisted everywhere, some large enough that she had to detour around them, or climb them like boulders. Juliana hoped that the clearing was as large as it appeared from the air, because she could not be certain how tightly she could hold her course. The air was hushed.
All winds stopped at heights well above her sheltered cathedral of green-roofed wood.
The trunks of the elder forest stood as pillars, large around as the Tower of Contemplation. The only light present had been diffused through web after web of leaves, casting the whole of the region in a green gloom, though it was still midday. On a whim, Juliana looked into the ether. The old oaks glowed with the fire of an inner circle sorcerer.
If one had been stretched up into the heavens.
The other species were dimmer, but not by so much as to make them any less grand. The forest was more navigable by the ether than by the false twilight beneath the dense canopy. She walked for a time, gazing in wonder, until she came to a break in the trees. It was the forest clearing she had been looking for. She switched back to the light to see what might have chosen such a place to live, and gasped in shock, nearly stumbling over herself in her haste to back away. She was surrounded by bizarre, human-like creatures.
"Ah, so you choose to look upon us rather than just through us," one of the creatures joked.
A few of them shared a laugh at her expense. The creature who spoke looked like a perfect human specimen, all prominent muscles and perfectly formed features. His skin was dark as oak bark.
"Who are you?" she dared to ask.
"I think you know the answer already," a more familiar voice replied. "Else you would not have come here."
Juliana whirled to see Iliardra standing not 2 paces from her. Her immortal oath mother floated in the air to match her height with Juliana's.
"This is it? The home of the immortals?" Juliana asked.
"Indeed it is. You pose us a rather unique problem, however," Iliardra replied.
"What sort of problem?"
"Let us discuss this in private," Iliardra said.
She walked off and allowed Juliana to follow through the throng of curious immortals. Iliardra's home was a dome of roots, dug out beneath one of the oaks around the clearing. It looked to be a sitting room and a collection of keepsakes, nothing more. The chairs were stone, carved, or more likely shaped by magic, into smooth, flowing shapes, piled with cushions. It was luxurious, despite its simplicity.
"We have 2 ways of dealing with visitors, typically," Iliardra said. "When mortals come here, we take them to a little village we have created for them, not far from here. They live out their lives there, unable to leave. Their numbers are few, despite occasional births. The rumors of disappearance for folk who explore too deeply are fine to keep most folk away."
"The other way?" Juliana asked, wide-eyed, knowing that Iliardra had not begun the tale describing her expected fate.
"Twinborn, we most often kill.
Preferably before they have learned of our nature.
The bridge between worlds is too swift a messenger. Word would spread." "You haven't killed me, at least not yet. Am I one of your exceptions?"
Juliana asked. Iliardra laughed, a bubbling, childlike laugh.
My dear, you are every exception I can think of, the immortal replied. First, you know of our kind, and know me personally. None of them would dare offer me the affront of killing an acquaintance of mine, and I could not bear to harm you. Second, you are a dangerous pawn to try moving about. The very last thing I want is for your twin-born lover to come to your rescue. I shudder to think at the damage he might wreak to have you safely back.
Juliana smiled. She knew what Kairos was capable of. His rescue of her in Zoran was proof enough of that.
Third, Iliardra continued, you were sent here with purpose, and that purpose has been fulfilled, at least in part. I assume you have not sufficiently recovered from your shock to think of telling Brennus or his twin of this place?
I could, though, at a moment's whim, Juliana said. She worried where that question led.
Of course, but it also means I have time to convince you not to tell him, Iliardra said. I could not wipe the memory of it from your mind, for your twin would recall it still. You twin-born are pesky creatures, you know, Iliardra winked.
Why would I not tell him? Juliana asked.
Kairos thinks this is the key to destroying Rashaan. I can only imagine that is why you left me the book of his prophecies, to show me his madness.
Kairos, Iliardra mused. So that is Brennus's other name, or rather, the name this new Brennus hides. And yes, that was part of the reason I gave you those books. They were a pair, to teach two sides of one lesson, and both lend their weight to another. Juliana narrowed her eyes.
You don't want another Talax.
Very much not, Iliardra agreed.
It was a darkened time for us, we creatures who hope to see the world's twilight. We friends of the departed gods. We...
Wait, Juliana interrupted.
You knew the gods?
Why, yes, quite well, in fact. They did not live among us, but came and went freely. We were more enduring companions than the mortals whose lives were blinks before their eyes, and ours.
What can you tell me about Tansha? Juliana asked.
Iliardra smiled.
Oh my, there are so few left that still believe in them. You are a follower of merciful Tansha?
Yes, my parents in Telurak were missionaries, my mother a priestess. Tansha had answered my prayers.
I doubt that very much. The gods left, chased off in fear of Talax. They broke the ways between worlds to shut him up here with us. Whatever prayers you offered, they were not fulfilled by her. But
no, Iliardra shook her head. She said goodbye to me. She hugged me close and apologized that she could not stay. Hers is a worthy path to follow, but you follow it on your own. In your lifetime, you always have.
Juliana stared past Iliardra. My twin-born playmate. My Brennus. Freedom from my marriage to Iridan. All coincidence?
But let us not be off our point, Iliardra said. Those two books carried a message that Brennus, that Kairos, needed to see for himself. The prophecies are Rashaan's journal, filled with blood and fire, treachery and paranoia. They sum him up far better than the painted civility that hides the monster beneath. I had fooled myself too many times before I saw that book. It opened my own eyes, and I hope it has opened Kairos's as well.
I think he already knew.
Perhaps it is easier to see a monster in someone you have never loved, Iliardra said. This same blindness may shadow you as well, and thus the reason for the second book.
Could you even bear to give it to him?
I almost couldn't, but I did, Juliana admitted. The story of Talax may one day be rewritten as the story of Brennus, if he keeps to the path he walks. Talax had the best of intentions. He created a peace that lasted hundreds of winters. Always, though, it was the threat of violence that stayed war. All the while, as Talax went off world to world in search of how we immortals overcame mortal frailty, the war lust built. When finally Talax went mad and destroyed himself, the world erupted in war like you have never imagined.
I think I know Kairos better than that, Juliana said.
Kairos would never. Talax would never either, but he did.
Iliardra said. Even Zizix, whose hatred and jealousy of Talax were unmatched, did not think ill of his intentions initially.
What do you want of me, then?
To spare Kyrus from the madness that plagued Talax, and to spare all of us, mortal and immortal alike, from another like him, Iliardra said. To convince him that a mortal life can hold all the riches he wishes of it. To keep him from pursuing immortality for himself, the quest that drove Talax to his ruin.
Kyrus isn't trying to learn how to become immortal for his own ends.
He is looking for a weakness in case Roshan turns on him, Juliana replied.
There is no weakness, Iliardra said. Not in immortality, at least. Arrogance, hubris, a quickness to suspicion and to kill before considering. Those are Roshan's weaknesses. The only thing that Kyrus might learn is how to become just like him.
Why would he lie to me? Juliana asked.
He trusts me completely.
A cynical smile curled one corner of Iliardra's mouth.
Such words have been spoken more times than you can count, and nearly always the one who feels the need to speak them is quite mistaken.
Juliana's thoughts sloshed loose in her head.
No, Brennus would never. But that would be the point, wouldn't it? That I never suspect.
Juliana closed her eyes and pictured the time she had spent with Brennus as a girl, with Kyrus more recently, with Brennus as Soria.
No, she decided. If I am to die a fool's death by his hands, it will be with a clear conscience. I do trust him.
You do not have to decide right away. Just refrain from telling him anything until you are sure, said Iliardra after a time in silence. It is for his own well-being.
Juliana shook herself from her stupor.
Was he right? Do you have a portal here to Tellurac? Is that how Roshan got there?
Yes, Iliardra said. Yes and yes. The portal is inert, but could be reawakened. And yes, we once allowed Roshan to do so. It is a mistake we do not look to repeat. Now I will take you back to your ship and your friend, where you might wait for your decision. If you agree to help us keep Kyrus from Talax's path, I might see if someone here can reawaken that monstrosity of runes you brought.
Kyrus was in the map room, waiting for Roshan upon his return. Roshan threw down the broken pieces of the staff of Galen by way of greeting. He was disheveled, his clothing torn and scorched. Something felt off about his manner, returning from battle. Kyrus was used to seeing him jovial, refreshed. Instead, his eyes hung, his arms dangled.
Had a poor time of it, did you? Kyrus asked. His chair sat in the Cloudwall Mountains, southwest of Mune, and faced Whitefield.
There was a bit of excitement while you were away. You dumped a load of Jinzan's necromancers on the palace lawns. The inner circle handled them. I assume you anticipated the trap?
It is done, Roshan said. He shook his head.
Disappointing.
Indeed. Rainsdark now sits atop a boiling cauldron with no hope of protecting itself. Even with the staff, who knows how long it might have been to repair the damage that was done, Kyrus replied. He let the warlock's thoughts wander their course.
He was beaten. I had but to wear him down. A contest in a dry bed of ether was unwinnable for him. I did everything I could, everything I needed to. Then I got careless, Roshan said.
He took one of the chairs that was stored off to the west of the Stormspire Mountains and the Goblin Lands and dragged it over. He took his seat above Potawai Wood. Kyrus watched for a time, wondering how best to broach the topic of Phaelin. Given Roshan's unusual turn of mood, he decided against it entirely. His other revelation, he could barely prevent himself from gushing about.
I figured out your puzzle, you clever old rascal.
Let me send up for wine, Kyrus offered. We can toast the new era of the Kadrin Empire and the end of the Fourth Necromancer War.
He smiled, hoping to make it infectious. Roshan looked at him a moment before nodding his assent.
I had scarcely thought to consider it such.
Those wars were the product of Lorimar's vengeance. I suppose, thanks to Exterion, this was as well, Rashan said. You might do well to consider the old man for a seat in the inner circle once more. You could use a cool head with a sharp tongue attached, Kyra suggested. Do we have a vacancy then? Rashan asked. Kyrus nodded. Was it anyone I would be saddened about? Kyrus shook his head. Then we can leave it for a later time. There's a wedding on the morrow, and an empire littered with corpses that still move. You shall help. There's nothing out there to truly risk ourselves against any longer. At least nothing imminently bent on our harm. Rashan tried a smile, but seemed not to find it to his liking. Servants brought the best and oldest vintage from Emperor Somek's cellars, one that dated back to Rashan's mortal days. They nursed the bottle for hours, filling their bellies with words more than wine. By the time Kyrus retired to bed, he wondered if perhaps his future in the Empire might be something other than the bleak march toward confrontation with Rashan that Dolvain had predicted.